All right, it looks like I'm live. Welcome, everybody. Ask a Libertarian Anything, AMA. I guess that's really A-A-L-A. I am Dan, Taxationist Theft Berman, and I can't tell you that I'm running for president, but I can't tell you that I'm not. And I was asked to do this AMA, and so I guess first I'm going to introduce myself, and then we're going to have a bunch of questions come in. We'll see how it goes from there. So, like I said, my name is Dan Taxationist Theft Berman. And a lot of people ask me, is that really my middle name? Did I legally change my middle name? And of course my answer is yes, it is lawfully my middle name, but it is not legally my middle name, because in order for it to be legally my middle name, I must ask the government for permission to be called something else. And of course, free men don't ask for permission. So it is lawfully my middle name. It is not legally my middle name. An important distinction that that few recognize, but it is very important in the law. Sorry if my, I think my volume might be a little bit too high. So I've been, I grew up in California, and I was exposed to mostly Democrat rhetoric. It's a blue state. When I was maybe in my late 20s, I moved to Texas, which is a red state, and I learned a little bit more there. Of course, by that time, I was already learning a little bit more about freedom and starting to move from Democrat to Republican. And around then is when I discovered Ron Paul and became interested in libertarianism. And ultimately, I found the Libertarian Party and joined them in their fight. What's really a really important distinction that I like to make with the Libertarian Party, because, you know, I see this all the time. If I used to go around saying I'm a libertarian, I ran for the Texas House of Representatives in 2014, and I would go around and I would introduce myself and I'd say I'm a libertarian. But a lot of people would say, oh, doesn't that mean you believe in XYZ, and they'd start coming up with all these crazy things that they think libertarians believe in. So I actually stopped running around telling everybody that I was a libertarian, because the reality is, even if you do that with the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, these are groups of millions of people. And the reality is they're not all the same. They don't all believe in the same thing. And they might have a specific platform, like the Libertarian Party has its platform. But the reality is, even within the Libertarian Party, even if you go to the conventions and there's just about 1,000 people sitting in the room, all the elected delegates, they do not all agree on that platform. There are plenty of people who want to remove things from that platform and plenty of people who want to add things to that platform. And it's not 100% agreement on what should be added or shouldn't be added. Sometimes the fight is over where the comma goes or whether the comma should be there at all. So to say that somebody is a libertarian, I feel this gets into the generalization, the labeling of people that ultimately becomes destructive to a society. When we say, oh, you're this, well, that doesn't necessarily mean to that person what you think it means when you say it. So that's a pretty important distinction I like to put up there. Taxation is theft is, of course, I've got it everywhere. It's on my hat. It's my middle name. I started doing these I started this at the 2016 convention. It's a little rubber stamp that you can stamp all your bills with. I don't have any of my bills on me. And I also started this other thing where we got these $100 bills that you can drop on the ground and they look real, but you pick them up and it's like, ooh, I found $100. And it's funny to watch people pick these things up because they do all kinds of weird stuff. And on the inside, it says taxation is theft. And you can get all these little goodies over at taxationistheft.cards. I have an entire online store with shirts and hats and all kinds of other stuff. Not this hat. Sorry, you're out of luck on that one. This is, I think, a very, very important part of the free thought and liberty, libertarian movement, whatever you want to call it, minarchists, anarchists, we're all fighting for less government. And ultimately, you know, and we all disagree on how much less. Some of them want it all gone. Some of us want less of it. Some of us just want to get rid of the IRS. But the reality is taxation pays for all the things that we don't want, literally. Because the reality is, if we did want that program, even if you're a minarchist and there are certain government programs that you do want, those programs you would pay for voluntarily because you want them. You would give them money, right? But when you have a gun to your head and you have to give over money, what does that pay for? That pays for the things that you don't want, right? And so this is really interesting. And I've had a lot of discussions with a lot of people because I walk around with this hat everywhere. And I've had, you know, Democrats come up to me, "You don't really believe in that, do you?" And I tell them yes. And we get into a discussion about what is theft. It's taking property that doesn't belong to you without consent, or sometimes without the knowledge of the person that you're taking it from. And a lot of times they say, "But I like paying my taxes. I like the roads and the schools and the police and everything that it pays for." And I tell them, well, okay, that's great. You can continue to pay those. But I don't like a lot of those services. I don't like the police that go around and kill people, and I don't want to pay them. Maybe I'd pay for, if I could pay for the police directly, and I could say, okay, I like this police department. They keep my city safe, and they don't go around shooting random people's dogs. I might pay them. I might give them money. It's like hiring security for a private building, or you know, you hire ADT to watch your house. I might pay for that. But when they come to my house, they put a gun to my head, they say, "Give me a third of your income," and they take that money, and they take that money to, they buy bombs with it, and they drop them on innocent women and children on the other side of the world. And of course, this is where the Democrats get in. Well, I agree with you there. I don't like how our tax money is being spent. But the reality is you're being forced to pay for that because you're being robbed. If you had control, if you were able to say, "Look, I don't like where you're spending this money. I don't like the bombs you're buying. I'm going to stop giving you this money." If you did that, they would have to stop. Like, they wouldn't have any money to fund this because nobody's interested in building those bombs. We did see how much money they raised for the wall, which is a lot less than they're going to take from us at gunpoint, because there are a lot less people who want that wall built, right? Or who are willing to actually pay for it. Some people say, "Yeah, I want that wall built," but that's because they've already paid their taxes and they think it's free at this point. They don't realize they're going to be paying for it for the rest of their lives. They're going to be making their children pay for it. There's maintenance costs that come along with that. So with taxation, the reason I focus on this the most with my campaign, with my speech, with my websites and everything, with my podcast, is because this is kind of like the gateway drug to the rest of bad government. If we didn't have to pay all these taxes at gunpoint, we wouldn't have all these bad government programs. I guess that's all I have to say on taxation. Another interesting concept that I have is, because we get into a lot of disagreements between minarchists and anarchists, whether or not the government has a right to exist. The anarchists will say fundamentally, government by definition is the use of force and it has no right to exist. I say technically government does not mean that by definition. A lot of people will say that the Constitution is bad, but the Constitution is not what's bad. It's what's in the Constitution that's bad. The Constitution allows the use of force for immoral purposes. Taxation, you know, that sort of thing. You arguably there's slavery, there's head taxes, there's all kinds of things that were in the original Constitution, even before the income tax. But at the same time, it does put some pretty good limits on government. So it's not perfect, but does it have a right to exist? The reality is, and this gets back into labeling and what do words mean, right? The reality is, if you have an organization, government is just an organization of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people doing something. There's a hierarchy. They do things. There's a crime. We put somebody in jail. Oh, there's a war. We send some bombs. This is what they do. Oh, there's a tax. We're going to collect it. It's just a group of people following orders, doing what they're permitted to do by the people who gave them permission. Now, if this organization and everybody in this organization understood what people's individual rights were, and that as actors for this organization were not allowed to violate those rights, then what we would see is that this government actually has a right to exist because it's not violating anybody's rights. It's not stealing for taxes. People are giving it money voluntarily. It's not sticking people in cages for victimless crimes. It's only helping to seek reparations for victims. It's basically a tool for a victim to use to make their lives whole again. And in this way, this government is not a violation of rights. Now, a lot of the anarchists will say, that's not government. Okay, that's fine. I mean, you can call it whatever you want to call it, but the reality is an organization has a right to exist as long as that organization does not violate people's rights. And this is, you know, like I said, this is one of those things that it really gets to me, because I can say one word. I can say the word libertarian. I can have a conversation with another person and I can use the word libertarian, and in my head it means one thing, and in their head it means something completely different. And we're having completely different conversations. We can completely disagree on something. You know, we could be arguing, oh, the libertarian philosophy says this, and no, that's not what it says, because we're using the wrong definition of the word libertarian, or we're using the wrong definition of the word property. That's a very important distinction. So, and in my opinion, 99% of the world's problems and misunderstandings and disagreements are from misunderstandings miscommunications of language itself. One person says one thing, the other person misinterprets it. They come back and they're insulted and they say something else in return. And it just goes from there and escalates, right? Something that we're always calling police on when they go to the scene of a crime or you know, somebody calls them out. The police like to go there and escalate things when really they should be going there and de-escalating things. So that's a really important thing that I like to teach people when it comes to their communication. I'm going to see if we can. I got some questions coming in. Awesome. So I'm only going to answer one question tonight, and that question is taxation theft? And the answer, of course, is yes. Okay, good night, everybody. No, I'm kidding. Desiree is asking, what is my stance on the war on drugs? Is possession a victimless crime? Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I have a website, legalizedpineapplepizza.org. The war on drugs is, if you look historically at it, I mean, there's so many different aspects to have this conversation, but if you look historically at it, it was used as a weapon against people that certain people didn't like. So, for example, Nixon didn't like the anti-war hippies who were making his war look bad. So he said, well, they're all out there smoking pot. Let's start cracking down on that, right? That was a big advance on the war on drugs. There was prohibition with alcohol. Somebody didn't like the people who were drinking alcohol. It's you know, there's really a lot of, and sometimes it comes down to, you know, you've got these politicians who are like, oh, I need to look like I'm a morally superior person so that I can keep getting reelected. So I'm going to find something and I'm going to deem it unacceptable, and I'm going to tell everybody why they need to keep electing me so that I can make it illegal. Skateboarding has been demonized. There's so many different things. So yeah, the war on drugs it's a complete farce. It's a failure. It's taking all of our money. Again, we're forced to pay for it through taxation. If we really wanted to pay for it, we'd pay for it voluntarily. But if there were no taxes and we had to pay for it voluntarily, no one would pay a dime for it, because the reality is, it doesn't do anything. It doesn't stop people from doing drugs. And you know, most of the horror stories that we hear about people doing drugs are extreme cases. There are quote unquote epidemics out there, but even then it's not as bad as they make it sound. And the reality is, yeah, people are taking too many drugs and they're going crazy and doing stupid things and killing themselves. But hey, people are doing that with alcohol too. People are doing that in cars sober. Some people just have mental diseases, which arguably an addiction to drugs is a mental disease. There's so many different ways you can look at it. People are people. The world is a dangerous place. But for us to try and regulate what people are allowed to do with their own bodies is a complete, it's a complete assault on our individual freedom. I got stopped by the police one time for driving without license plates, because I don't ask for permission. And we got into, it's funny because, you know, this was on a road where they're always looking for drug traffickers. This was like on the drive from McAllen, Texas up to San Antonio. It's this big open drive where there's, you know, from the border, it's actually pretty easy to get across the border because there is no wall, you know, all this other stuff. But the thing is, to get from any of these border towns into like the rest of the U.S., like San Antonio, there are only a couple roads and they all have checkpoints on them. So it's actually really kind of difficult. So on this road, they're always stopping people looking for drugs because it's a major drug trafficking route, supposedly. Now we know all the stuff's coming from Colorado. And so the police stopped me, and I was happy to sit there and waste an hour of their time because I'm sitting there thinking like, well, all the drugs are getting through. That's a win for me, right? That's a strike against your war on drugs. And I was talking to this cop, and you know, I had all this political propaganda in my car, and he was asking me things like, well, what about the war on drugs? Because, you know, I think at that time I was telling people I was a libertarian. So, you know, so he was asking me all these questions. What about the war on drugs? And I said, what's your problem with drugs? Why shouldn't people be able to have drugs? And he gave me a story about, you know, the week before that. He says, look, a week ago, I got a call to a house. I went out there and there was some guy strung out on meth breaking into a house. He's in the house. He's stealing the TV. He's breaking shit and, you know, all this other stuff. But we caught him. We arrested him. And now he's going to jail and, you know, all this other stuff. And that was all because he was high on meth. And I said, okay. So, but you caught him, right? He's like, yeah, we caught him. And I'm like, okay, and he's going to jail, right? Yeah, yeah, it was his third offense. Third offense, breaking and entering, stealing stuff. Yeah. Okay, so you caught him. He's going to jail for stealing, right? Did you catch him on possession of drugs? No. But he was high. That's why he was doing it. Okay, but you caught him doing a criminal activity, actually stealing, actually creating a victim, taking property from another person. You caught him for that. You're prosecuting him for that. He's going away to jail. What's your problem? Well, he shouldn't have been doing drugs. Well, how do you know that if he didn't have drugs, he wouldn't have been doing that in the first place? I mean, you can't know that. And what if he had been doing drugs, but he had plenty of money to pay for his drugs? Maybe he had a rich dad, maybe he had a job and he's managing his addiction and he's able to sit on his couch at home and not bother anybody and do his drugs. Would you have a problem with it then? And of course, this guy is like, well, I guess not, but... You know, and so it's really interesting that, like, you know, people's fears about drugs are the consequences of it. But the reality is these consequences can be dealt with on their own. They're really separate from the actual drugs. Could they be a cause of the drug? Sure. But could car accidents be caused by coffee because people are all like hyped up and jittery while they're driving? Maybe. That doesn't mean we should be out banning coffee. You know, every little, like, it might make a little difference. It might make a big difference. But we shouldn't be prosecuting people for putting things in their own body. Like I said, the world is a dangerous place that we have to live in with a bunch of other people. We can't control everything. There are dangers out there. Even if you got rid of all the guns, all the drugs, all the bad, all the disease, the world's not going to be a safe place. We have to understand that, and we have to live our lives accordingly instead of trying to fix all these other problems, because otherwise we're just gonna be running on this hamster wheel trying to solve all these problems that can't be solved. And what kind of a life is that? Why not just sit back and enjoy life, understanding that there are dangers that we should just be on guard to avoid? Possession is a victimless crime. Is possession a victimless crime? No, it's not a crime at all. Let's see. Andrew is asking, do I support the border wall? Absolutely not. And I know this is another one of those things where there's a million different ways to have this conversation. Ultimately, for one thing, 80% of illegal immigrants didn't walk across the border. They came by plane and they overstayed their visa. Walking across the, like, our border's so big, and we have so much technology that it's like this is completely stupid. I saw a statistic that, you know, it was a bell chart of the number of illegal crossers apprehended. And over the past 10 years, it's been on a steep decline. And of course, somebody in the comments is saying, oh, well, that's just how many they caught, as if they're catching less now. That doesn't make any sense. They have like insane technology along the border. I go back and forth on the border all the time. They have infrared cameras. They have drones. They have all this surveillance technology that it is practically impossible it's not impossible, but it's more and more and more difficult for people to just walk across now and make it through, you know, like I said, these places where the checkpoints are, because they'll see people walking out in the middle of the desert or the middle of the fields. They'll see them with infrared. They'll see them in the middle of the night. It's more and more difficult, and the numbers are dropping. They're able to catch more people, and the numbers are still dropping. That means it's less of a problem than it was 10 years ago. So the fact that, like, now everybody's finally like, yeah, we're finally going to build a wall. It's like, okay, like, so what? what are you accomplishing by that? People are going to go over it. They're going to go under it. They're going to go around it, just like they're coming today. And like I said, most of the people they're coming in legally, and they're just overstaying their visa. Which you're like, Border Patrol is not going to catch that because they are literally letting them in. Tyler, do I do drugs? I can neither confirm nor deny the allegations. And I can neither confirm nor deny whether there's alcohol in this beverage, but that's legal. So, let's see. Chris asked, Ashanti said, I got a couch for sale. No, I don't have a couch for sale. Am I looking for a couch? No, I'm looking for some other furniture. But actually, I could go with an outdoor couch. I need an outdoor couch for my patio. Let's see. Trey Williams, how would I fix the healthcare system? So that's a really good question. And actually, I have one of my campaign platforms is to abolish the FDA. Now, of course, not overnight, because we do rely on it as sort of a screening mechanism for the quality of healthcare and drugs. But the reality is that service would be better provided by a private industry. So while I don't want to get rid of that overnight, I would say the best thing to do is prepare everybody for a private sector to replace that. And, you know, I would not prosecute any company that sells unapproved, FDA unapproved products, as long as, hey, at least you're not telling people, you're not lying to people and saying this is FDA approved. Like, maybe you say something on the label, this is not FDA approved, use it at your own risk. Because ultimately there are people dying because they don't have access to medication because it's still in the experimental phase. And the amount of money that it costs to go through that system is ridiculous. I was reading a book by Dr. Mary Ruart. I have it on my shelf over here somewhere. Death by Regulation. And she points out, she's an actual medical researcher, and she points out that 80% of medical innovation is lost because of the FDA, because it's so expensive to get these medications and procedures through the approval process. And there was actually this one, like, totally fucking blew my mind. There's a process. I don't remember the exact details about what it was called, but there was a process where somebody's sick. They extract cells from your body. They put it through a process. They somehow turn it into stem cells. They create some, you know, magic elixir out of it. They inject it back into your body next to, like, a damaged part of your kidney or whatever, and it magically regrows because of the stem cells. This is a procedure that's taking one part of your body and sticking it in another part of your body. It's a medical procedure. It's kind of, I mean, they do stuff like that all the time. They take skin off of one part and put it somewhere else, or they take fat cells or muscle tissue. But for some reason, when you take it out of the body and you process it and you want to put it back in, now it's considered a drug, and the FDA prohibits you from doing that. So this procedure, which could save people's lives, is basically illegal, and no doctor that wants to be able to do that is willing to go through, like, the hundreds of millions of dollars that it takes to get that process or to become FDA approved to be a manufacturer of this drug. That's fucking insane. So the first thing that I would do is say, look, we need private companies to start saying, hey, we're gonna start competing. We're gonna say, hey, we have a different procedure for verifying whether these drugs are good or not, and we're going to stick our name on the label. We're gonna say it's not FDA approved. It's something something drug, something something DA. approved a different logo, and that logo is going to say that, hey, this product is okay to use. And if you trust that logo, let's say a scandal comes out, right? Because this company approved some drug and now it's killing people and now it's on recall. That company is going to be afraid of that. But what happens when the FDA does that? Nothing, right? They're doing that all the time. They're recalling drugs because they're killing people. And what do you do? Well, I'm not going to trust FDA drugs anymore. No, because that's all that's there. So they don't really care. They'll approve some of these drugs, and there are no consequences for them. But if there was a company that, you know, that their entire business model is dependent on the fact that they're trustworthy, they're reputable, that every drug that has their label on it has to be safe and effective, or at least safe, then they're going to put a little more caution into that. But at the same time, they might not put the same ridiculous restrictions that the FDA does to get approved. Now, and I know a lot of people worry, oh, we're going to have all these crazy drugs that are going to kill people. The reality is no. There have been studies done that say the FDA just requires way too much, and the drugs are already known to pass the test, you know, before they get to the end. And there are other things that say, you know, if the FDA rep just doesn't like your company because your representative went into the FDA, they spilled coffee on their lap one day, you're not getting approved just because they don't like you. And, you know, if you come out and talk shit about the FDA, then, you know, publicly, then it's like, forget it. You're going out of business. So that would be the first place I would start with that. The reality is, I just want to say one more thing on that. The reality with the healthcare system is everybody's really obsessed and focused on how do we pay? Healthcare is so expensive. How do we pay for it? We need to stop thinking like that, because the reality is if we distribute the cost, these pharmaceutical companies are still maintaining their monopolies. They're still raking us over the coals. They're making a shit ton of money, and we're all just distributing that cost so that we can all share the payment. That's no good. What we should be focusing on instead is we should focus on the cost itself. Why is the cost so high? Why are these companies making such high profits? And I know they say they need those profits because that goes into research and development, but the reality is the research and development shouldn't cost that much, and it wouldn't cost that much if it weren't for the FDA. But aside from that, if we focus on lowering the cost by introducing competition into the marketplace, we wouldn't be so worried about healthcare costs. I've gotten healthcare in Mexico, and I've seen how their system works down here, and it's not perfect. But the reality is they don't have the monopoly here on the drugs and on everything. When you go to a doctor, they're not required to jump through so many hoops just to get you in the door. Like, for example, I went to a doctor down here to check out. I had an infection in my eye. I didn't have to go through three nurses. I didn't have to fill out all this paperwork. They didn't have to put all my information into a computer secured by their whatever the regulations are for that. That costs those organizations lots and lots of money. And I paid, it was 50 pesos. It's like $3 to have the doctor look at my eye. And he didn't check my blood pressure. He didn't run labs. He didn't do all this other stuff because he knew, oh yeah, I've seen that before. I know exactly what that is. Here's a cream. Go put it on. That's it. He didn't go through all the other hoops that normally they make you go through because that's required by law. And that's just part of the procedure. They have to know your weight. They have to know your, like, all this other stuff. We didn't go through that because it wasn't necessary. And because of that, the cost is a lot lower, and he can see a lot more patients. So like I said, it's not perfect. And I wouldn't probably go to a $3 doctor if I was having a heart attack. But when you consider that, you know, like they say, when everybody has free healthcare and you can go to the doctor for any reason, and oh, you've got a runny nose, now you're going to the ER. Like, all this, everybody piling in on there is creating more cost, because now you're basically saying whenever you have a runny nose, you're going to the Ferrari dealership and you're getting Ferrari level medication, when the reality is you shouldn't be going there. You should be going to, like, the little cheap corner doctor that only charges you a couple bucks to say, oh yeah, it's just a cold, here, take one of these. We're limiting our resources there. Let's see, Connor James is asking, is this the couch auction? I feel like there's an inside joke that I'm missing out on. Andrew, so it's okay for illegal immigrants to take our jobs, and it's okay for the actual taxpayers to pay for housing, schools, health care for all of them, rather than giving our veterans health care. Okay, that's a fair question, and I know a lot of libertarians get pissed off when those types of questions are asked, but no, it's actually a fair question. You know, let me try to address each one of these. So, is it okay for illegal immigrants to come and take our jobs? First of all, they're not your jobs. You don't own those jobs. You don't own those businesses. They're not your jobs to give. Those jobs are not created with the intent that they are solely for American citizens. The same way that an American corporation creates jobs overseas because those people are there and not here, they're not creating those jobs for those people overseas. They're just creating them in another place where people are willing to work for less. They could move a factory from China to Thailand, to, you know, wherever they want, to Russia, to South America. They can move it wherever they want. Those jobs do not belong to anybody. And to think this way is really, like, if you think about it the same way, you could say, okay, what if, you know, well, let's, why don't we look at the states that way? Why don't we say, okay, well, there's a company in Texas and they have jobs. All these Californians are coming to Texas and they're taking our jobs. Nobody says that, because the reality is nobody was fed the propaganda to say that. Like, nobody, like you, I guarantee you didn't walk into a job one day and they said, oh, sorry, we can't hire you because we hired an illegal immigrant. Nobody ever told you that. The reality is you've been listening to this programming and this propaganda that they've been telling you for so many years that Mexicans are going to take your jobs. There might be some cases like that, but the reality is for most people that doesn't happen. Let's see. It's okay for the actual taxpayers to pay for housing, schooling, and healthcare for all of them. That's actually another misconception, because think about this. How are you paying for schools? It's not your income tax. You're paying for your schools through your property tax. Where are these illegal immigrants staying? They're not living somewhere. They're not paying rent. When they're paying rent, they're paying their landlord's property tax. So they actually are paying the school tax. They're paying the police tax, and all these other things. Healthcare, I guess that's up for debate as to, is there a hospital that illegal immigrants can just walk into and get free healthcare? I would think, I don't think I can walk into a hospital anywhere in the U.S. and get free healthcare. So I don't really think that's a thing. But of course, if you want to argue about the welfare state, I would happily say, okay, fine. If this is your only problem that, you know, hey, there's an inequality in the welfare system, why not just say, okay, fine, let's end the welfare state, or at least not give welfare benefits to quote unquote illegal immigrants. That's a perfectly acceptable answer. Instead, like, think about this, like, really, instead, like, there's a problem. You're putting money into a system, and people that you don't want to take out because they're not putting into it, they're taking out. You don't want that to happen. That's a problem. So the easiest solution is don't let them take out of that system. But instead, you are programmed, don't let them in the country at all. Why not just say don't let them take out of the system? Another interesting fact is if you look at the actual statistics, and this is from the Bureau of Bureau of Labor Statistics, something like that. They'll actually tell you that illegal immigrants are paying in $1 billion more than they're taking out, because a lot of them are working, and this is estimated, but a lot of them are working with fake IDs, which means they're using Ron Swanson's name and social security number to get a job. They're paying withheld taxes and social security. And then at the end of the year, they can't get a refund because that check is going to be issued to Ron Swanson and they don't have an ID that says Ron Swanson on it. So they can't cash that check. So that's another interesting misconception. Let's see. And veterans, why not pay for veterans' healthcare? Well, that's another big problem. Why is the government hiring people, sending them off to war, letting them risk their lives and get killed, and then not giving them shit? That's got nothing to do with illegal immigration. That's because your politicians don't give a fuck about you. They're willing to risk your life over some oil, some profits, some you know, some glorious war in the Middle East that has no end, they're willing to risk your life because they don't give a fuck about you. And you're concerned about illegal immigrants because they told you that's what you should be. You should be concerned about illegal immigrants. Don't be concerned about the politicians who are killing your children. Let's see. Nicholas is asking, so another wasted ballot spot. Well, I'm not on the ballot yet. So if you have a better candidate than me, go ahead and stick them on there. Brian Ellison is asking, why is Rothbard wrong about borders? I don't know what Rothbard has to say about borders. I will say this, because I feel like this is one of those, oh shit, he doesn't know anything about Rothbard. Here's the way I see people. And this kind of goes back to my thing about labels. Like, I don't, like, Ron Paul taught me a lot. That's great. He's not perfect. There are things I disagree with him on. I couldn't even tell you what I disagree with him on. But I don't, like, I like to discuss ideas and concepts. And I really don't care where they came from. Because the reality is, everybody's got different opinions. And there is no single person that we should idolize. We shouldn't say, oh, well, I everything that Rothbard ever said is awesome. Except for this, like, who cares really? Like, if you want to say, here's a book from Rothbard and give it to a friend and say, hey, read this. There's a lot of really interesting viewpoints on this. You might say, I don't agree with everything in this book, but there are some really interesting points. Maybe you agree with different things than what I agree with. That's really what we should do. Like, I really don't like this thing that everybody's like throwing around names as, and it's the whole Obamacare thing, right? Like, Obamacare, as if like this book, this like 50 million pages of healthcare regulations is Obama's creation and Obama should be worshipped because he, like, it's not even his thing. And maybe that's different from, you know, what Rothbard says about certain things, but it's, we should stop associating names and stop worshiping people and start understanding and discussing concepts and deciding which concepts are better and more applicable. Jesslyn Blake says, do I agree that illegal immigration is a problem? If so, what solutions? So again, do I think it's a problem? Not really. I mean, in the way that there are all these other systems in place that are problems and illegal immigration might complicate some of those other issues. Maybe, but at the same time, it's like, look, realistically, you can say, okay, we've got this country. Our population is 320 million people. If 10 million people were suddenly added, now our population is 330 million people. Does it matter that they came from Mexico? Does it matter that they came from Canada? Does it matter if they came from one state and they just had like another baby boom and 10 million people were born tomorrow? Does it matter? The reality is, it's a change in population. The problems that we're told to worry about, they're either propaganda to control us, to make us, you know, say we need government to solve a problem, because ultimately, like, what does any salesperson have to do? They have to convince you that you need them, right? Like, what is, everybody owns a car now. What are the car companies doing? They're convincing you that, oh, we've got a newer car that does better things. And like, because you have to go out and buy another car. Whereas like a lot of the older generation are just like, I've had this car for 50 years. Why would I need a new one? If they want to keep selling cars and everybody's already got them, they need to convince you some reason to buy it. And so it's the same thing with government. If there are no problems in the world, what does the government have to sell you? They have to sell you solutions to something, right? So they create problems. Yes, there are real problems in the world, but I don't think that illegal immigration is an actual problem. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Here's an interesting article that that I read, that there was an illegal immigrant who was arrested for the fifth time after he was deported four times, I guess. And it's like, okay, well, that's proof. Deportation doesn't work. If you arrested him, why not just throw him in a prison? You know, it's, and I know, like, people are like, well, why should we have to house those people in our prisons and have to pay for it? That's a really good question. Why should you have to stick 75% of our, why should you have to pay for 75% of the people who are in our prisons when they're there for nonviolent drug offenses? I don't know if I screwed that number up, but it's like, get those people out of prison first and you'll drop your prison bill. Is that really what you're worried about? The cost of your prisons? I don't think so. It's a misdirection. You're being controlled. Let's see. Brian Ellison asks, why is Clayton Hunt the only real libertarian, and what can we do to be more like him? He is the only real libertarian because there's a test at theonlyreallibertarian.com, and to this day, Clayton Hunt is the only person who has passed that test. So head on over to theonlyreallibertarian.com and see if you are a real libertarian. And if you want to be more like him, well, stop worrying about how libertarian you are, I guess. I don't know if that's the right answer for that. Gage is asking, what about addressing the doctor-to-patient ratio? The fact that the cost of education limits resources. Yes, you're absolutely right. And this goes into like the AMA and government regulation. And the AMA, I think, is kind of a quasi-government agency. But you're right. The number of doctors is limited. There are actually the way it works is you've actually got doctors in other countries who are they're completely competent doctors. They can perform heart surgeries, brain surgeries, whatever. They can act as doctors. And especially like I said, there's different grades of doctors. Like, you know, you don't need 10 years of medical school to be able to diagnose a cold or, you know, an ulcer or something like that. So for your what do they call it, general practitioner, you might not need as much, but you might, they tell you to go to a specialist afterwards, right? So a lot of the more costly doctors are specialists. And the reality is there are a lot of general practitioners and even specialists that are coming in from other countries because they're like, oh, I'm going to go to America. I'm going to make a lot of money, right? Where people are willing to pay a lot more for healthcare because that's where the market is. And then they get here and they find out, oh, well, even though I'm qualified to perform brain surgery in the country that I came from, the United States is going to make me start not totally from the bottom, but they're going to make me go through this whole process again. I have to go back to school for several years to become certified as or to pass their tests to become a doctor in this place. And the AMA puts limits up on this from what I understand. If let's say you have a college and you have the doctors passing their final test and 100% like across the board, every single person in that class gets 100% on the entire, you know, course, that college is only allowed to make X number of doctors. And if they go over that number, then they can have their license taken away by the AMA so basically what they're saying is, even though these people are qualified to be doctors, we don't want that many doctors because it's going to create competition. It's going to lower prices. So yes, that's another really interesting issue that needs to be addressed. Let's see. And of course, this is the whole thing about, you know, the free market and licensing and all this other stuff. You're creating a higher barrier of entry. There might be people who, you know, yeah, you might not, who said this? I think it was Larry Sharp. He said, he says his barrier or his measure is, would you ask your friend to do it, right? And so it's like, would you ask your friend to drill your tooth and put in a filling? Probably not. Would you ask your friend to fly a plane for you? Probably not. So in those cases, he would ask for those people to be licensed. But the reality is, if I have a friend and he just happens to own an airplane, because he's, I don't know, a millionaire or whatever, and he says, yeah, I know how to fly this thing. Come on, get in. Let's go. I might get in. Because like, okay, he knows how to fly it. I've seen him fly it a few times before. Okay, fine. I trust him. I don't care if his license is valid or not. And you'd probably say the same thing about a car, right? Like you don't always ask your friend, hey, is your license valid before you get in the car with him? But I might be a little bit, I might live a little bit more dangerously than some other people. So some other people might say, no, I don't care. I don't even care if you do have a license. You're not a professional pilot. I'm not getting in a plane with you, especially not that little Cessna. So it really depends on what people's levels of comfort are. And the reality is when you have an airline company, let's say there was no FAA license for being a commercial pilot, These commercial airlines would not just hire anybody to fly these planes because they know, well, hey, if somebody crashes the plane, that's going to be a huge lawsuit on our hands, right? So they're gonna want some degree of assurance that this person knows how to fly the plane. And so there might be third parties that certify this. For example, scuba diving. I'm certified to be a scuba diver. And that was done through a third party organization. And I thought there were two or three of them. I just found out there's actually like 20 or 30 of them, around the world that will certify a person to be a scuba diver. And what this means is you're able, depending on your degree of certification, you're able to go anywhere in the world and say, hey, I have this card that says I'm certified by this company. It's not a government thing, but it basically says, okay, I can rent you my equipment. I can give you a tank. And I can take you on a boat and drop you out in the middle of the ocean, and I don't need to supervise you and worry that you're going to kill yourself because you are certified. I am relieving myself of any liability. Versus, oh, you just gave that guy a tank and he didn't know what he was doing. You killed him. You know, it's a private certification. So, you know, we could see that with driver's licenses, especially when we're talking about commercial trucking or anything like that. Taxi drivers, you know, especially we're seeing private licensing with taxis, kind of with Uber and Lyft. But with commercial aircraft, the same thing could be applicable there. And it would fix all our problems. The reality is we have planes landing in the U.S. every day, flown by pilots who are certified in other countries. I don't know if they're certified in the U.S. or maybe they have to be to enter U.S. airspace or something. I don't know. But you know, we rely on a lot from other countries, which, as a matter of fact, that's an interesting point there. I always thought this was kind of stupid. When the 9/11 thing came along and we all had to take our shoes off and couldn't put in liquids in our carry-ons and all this other stuff, that was only in the U.S. And it's still, most of those rules still only are in the U.S. When I get on a plane from Mexico to fly into the U.S., I don't have to take my shoes off. And what's even funnier is if you go to the TSA early in the morning, I don't know what they're doing right now since they're taking a nice little vacation. But if you go early in the morning on a really busy day, the TSA will actually rush you through. They'll tell you, don't take off your shoes today. Don't take your electronics out of your bag. Like as if, oh, like, I mean, look, if somebody really wanted to get through their security, and we already know their penetration tests show that 90% of guns and drugs and bombs and everything else get through those tests when they're tested by security professionals. I'm not saying you should test it yourself. They get through. And so the reality is that whole thing is a scam. But if you are really concerned about that security, you can always get on a plane in another country with less security and fly into the U.S. And it's like, okay, so that's always been a thing since 9/11, and we still haven't had any hijacked planes ever since. So is this really a risk? Like, that's kind of more proof that the whole thing is all smoke and mirrors. Joe is asking, how would I suggest reverting back to privatized monetary policy? So the very first thing I would do, as always, is I would say we need to, the very first thing to do is destroy the government's monopoly. Allow people to start creating competing currencies. Bitcoin is out there, which, you know, is great, but the reality is it's not, what's the word I want to use for this? It's not as free and open and as available. It's not, you can't conduct business with these things as easy as you can with even cash, or with money, because they don't like those systems. They put all these roadblocks in place. There's all this know your customer stuff for all these offshore, you know, currency conversion things. There's all these rules against currency conversions. There's a couple people, Randall Lord and his son, sitting in prison right now for exchanging Bitcoin for dollars, even when there's no law that said he couldn't, it's for doing it without a license, even though there is no license required to do that, in the state of Louisiana. It's all bullshit, and they're putting people in prison. They're putting up like ridiculous requirements. I was actually, when I kind of got into the Liberty Movement, I wanted to create a gold-backed currency, using like creating like a PayPal type system, And I found out this, the regulations that were required for that were insane. And I found out that, that to this day, since the 2008 banking crisis, there, I think there's only been one new bank chartered in the entire country. Meanwhile, there are like, you know, still hundreds going out of business every year, or being taken over. The reality is it's monopolized. And so the very first thing I would do is get rid of all these regulations. And they say, oh, know your customer. It's to prevent money laundering. That's bullshit. The whole like money laundering isn't even a crime. It's their whole thing is like, okay, there's a crime out there of people importing drugs, all over the world, which, you know, as we know, is mostly done by the CIA, where, they say that like we're going to attack that problem by creating all these anti-money laundering laws, but the reality is that doesn't do anything. That really limits our ability to conduct international trade. The reality is that this is all just a ploy to get us to give social security numbers to get a bank account so they can tax us better, which a lot of people don't know. Like, you know, as little as I mean. It was 9/11, but even a little bit after 9/11, you could still get a bank account without a social security number, and the IRS couldn't levy it because they can only levy bank accounts that have social security numbers on it, because for all they know, it's somebody else with the same name. So the very first thing I would do to do that is allow competition, and we'll just see what happens. And, you know, even... This is how bad the U.S. wants to prevent competition. You might remember Gaddafi, who was, I think it was president of Egypt, who was trying to create a gold-backed currency to exchange oil with, and he was assassinated over that. And that was my conspiracy theory, and then, of course, Hillary's email leaks just confirmed that recently. But we have to allow competition at all cost, because ultimately, you know, like they say, let me print the money, and I care not who writes the laws. I think that was one of the Rockefellers that said that. Brian Ellison, why is my logo so much better looking than me, and how much Botox would it take to make me look more like it? I've never really been into the whole square jaw thing, so. Yeah, I don't know. And plus, I'd have to dye my face yellow, and it could turn out bad. I might end up looking like Orange Man. Let's see. Tobias asks, politics is like joining ISIS to try and change it from the inside. Are all politicians corrupt if they are paid for by theft? So the answer is... That's a really good question. So first, let me address the point of changing it from the inside, because I know that's something that is much debated, usually among anarchists who say, ha, idiot, you think you're going to get elected and change it from the inside. You can't change it from the inside. And there are some pretty good arguments about not being able to do that. But let me give some examples. To a lot of anarchists who say 9/11 was an inside job. Well, wasn't the tower taken down from the inside then? Wasn't that changing it from the inside? When you look at, I'll use a fictional example, Star Wars, the Death Star was destroyed from the inside. It was ultimately, they got a bomb somehow onto the inside and it set off the whole thing. And then we found out later, how did they get the schematics to know where to put that bomb? Where was it? How was the flaw planted? By someone from the inside. Here's another real world example. Termites. If you've ever seen a house collapse because of termites, that's an inside job. So I get it. Like, you know, one person is not going to get elected and quote unquote change it from the inside. But the reality is this too, like a lot of these politicians, as much as we say they're all corrupt and they're all liars and they're all pieces of shit. The reality is a lot of them are, I'll say some of them, at least one of them. I don't want to give an actual number because I don't know, you know, I don't follow too closely most of these people, other than the outcome of their decisions. But some of them, I believe, are They have good intentions. They don't want to be corrupt. They do want to make things better. They just don't understand that taxation is theft. And so they continue, oh yeah, well, okay. Yeah, we can create a new tax because it's going to pay for something good. And they don't understand that taxation is theft. And that's fine. I mean, you know, this kind of reminds me of talking about the military. A lot of people say, oh yeah, everybody in the military, they're all a bunch of crazy apes running around shooting guns at people, and they're maniacs and they're animals. That's not necessarily true. I think a lot of them, they fall for the lies. They join the army because they think they're going to protect the country. They think they're going to get benefits, like they're going to get paid for school. They think they're not going to get deployed. They're not going to have to actually do anything or kill anybody. And then they find out, like, oops, that was a lie. Now I have to do things. And we see a lot of vets who are forced into going to war and doing things, following orders that, I mean, arguably they could refuse to follow those orders. But, you know, they go through this learning experience and they come back home and we find out that, hey, these people learned that war is a racket and it's a scam and they should never have fallen for that and they should never have gone and risked their lives. Some find that out too late and they're already dead. Some find out too late and they've already killed people or done other things that they tremendously regret. But I think, you know, the intention is there. The reality is that the brainwashing of taxation and the brainwashing of government's role as a necessary evil, that we have to do these evil, that evil is necessary in order to live in a civilized society. That brainwashing is so deeply ingrained in our society that it's difficult to say that everybody is really just in there to rob somebody else. They might just be, you know, that's their understanding of how the world works, and they're propagating that. Sorry, I'm just seeing that I'm getting close to the end of the show. I can actually go on and keep talking for a little bit, but I just wanted to. I guess I'm gonna drop in a couple plugs for everybody. So this is the Ask a Libertarian show. You can follow Ask a Libertarian on Facebook. That is, if you look at this video right here, you should see it's like a yellow Statue of Liberty. That is the Ask a Libertarian page, so go follow that. There's also my pages. I've got taxationistheft.cards. These are all in the comments. YouTube.com/taxationistheft. Oops, what just happened? Facebook is terrible. Okay. Let's see. Berman2020.com if you want to learn more about my campaign. And legalizepineapplepizza.org, of course. And the podcast, you can get the podcast in any of your favorite podcast shows. Taxationistheft.info is where I keep my blog and some other interesting things. And taxationistheft.cards is where you can get your swag and t-shirts and hats and everything. If there are, I want to say I was supposed to read a couple other links or make some other mentions. If I miss anything, guys, if you can send me that, I will make that announcement. But in the meantime, let me hit one more question. Let's see. I guess that was the last question. So I'll keep talking about, government and changing things from the inside. And I can see Clayton Hunt is pressing the like button on rapid fire. So go visit theonlyreallibertarian.org or .com. Sorry. So changing things from the inside, it's, I get it. And look, the reality is, you know, I'm running for president. Sorry, unofficially. I can't tell you that I am. I can't say that I'm not. To quote unquote, or a lot of libertarians are running for president to change things from the inside. But the reality is they only have so much power. Even if they are able to completely shut down the United States government, like Trump has done, which I guess is not complete shutdown, but even if they're able to completely shut it down, we still have the state and local governments to deal with. And those guys aren't really playing fair either. You know, that's where a lot of the asset forfeiture comes from. That's where a lot of the drug possession arrests are made. It's, you know, the states are doing a lot of evil too. They're not dropping bombs on the other side of the world, but they are doing a lot of evil to their own people. So it's important to realize that the president is, that's not the end game. You don't just get one person in. And so to that matter, yeah, you can't change it from the inside. But the reality is, and especially with my campaign, the goal is not, I mean, the goal is obviously to get someone into an office, but the goal is ultimately to change the mindset of the people. Because the reality is, if 90% of the country believes that we need a wall, there's going to be a wall. If 90% of the country believes that taxation is necessary to function in a civilized society, we're going to have taxation. If 90% of the country believes it's right to murder, we're going to have murder. That's just the way it is. And so the reality is, if we want to change the behavior of our society, we have to change the mindset. Most of the country, if 90% of the country agrees that taxation is theft, we're going to start seeing less taxation. Because yes, that's, you know, it doesn't take that other 10%. It takes less than 1% to be all of the elected officials who are creating the taxes and enforcing the taxes. But the other 90% of the people aren't going to stand for that. When the tax man comes along and if a tax man comes to your house and you're confident that out of 10 people on your block, 9 people have your back to stand down against the IRS, the tax man, to take your property, that tax man ain't getting shit. That's the reality. But the way it works now is 90% of the country believes that taxation is not theft and that taxation is what's paying for their roads. And so if you're the one asshole on the block who doesn't want to pay his taxes, you're evil and you should go to jail. That's the mindset now. So we need to change that mindset. And until we change that mindset, who gets elected doesn't really matter. So at the same time, I do want to say this. The machine is big and evil and has many facets to it. And the best we can do is attack it from every angle. Some people can run for office. Some people can help change the mindsets of other people. These are all different things we should be doing. Some people can help spread information. Some people can, create alternatives. They can start creating those businesses that are going to compete with government and show that the private sector can do it better. These are all different ways to attack the state. And these are all things that we should be doing. There's not just one solution that we should all get behind. Like if all of us who want more freedom just said, okay, all we're going to do is we're going to get behind Bitcoin and we're going to make Bitcoin everything, that's not going to change anything. That's just one thing. Even if the entire world's currencies switched to Bitcoin, there would still be taxes. Yeah, it would be a little bit harder for them to get it. But they might start waterboarding people to get the password to your private key just so that they can take their payment. And then they're going to take an extra 20% for having to go through the trouble. All right. Well, I guess I'm not seeing any more questions coming in at the moment. So let me see if I'm going to see if I can find a couple more. Let's see. Oh, the Thin Blue Line game. So this is something I helped a few friends create, which is really an interesting game. So it's a card game, kind of like Cards Against Humanity. But I'm not into games that much at all, card games, board games, or anything. But I thought this was a really interesting concept because for the first and most obvious reason is it's an interesting they call it a police simulation card game that kind of shows you how the police actually operate and how you can screw each other over and trick your way into winning and what the real motivation of being a police officer is. It's an interesting way to teach your friends who might not hate the police, but it's an interesting way to show them how these things actually work. But what I thought was like fascinating about this game is like, so because I'm a minimalist, so I love small and portable things. And this game is like, it's small. It fits in your pocket or fits in your luggage or, however you're going to carry it. And what's interesting about it is it's not just a card game. You actually take the cards and you lay them out. There's like instructions to tell you how. You lay it out on a table. And now it's actually more like a board game, but it's with cards. I don't know. I thought that was kind of interesting. But so that's a cool game to check out. It's you can check that out at thinbluelinegame.com. And let's see. Waterboard you and bill you for the rag. That's right, Clayton. Let's see. Everyone's making fun of my dog barking. Yeah, she and he are always over here making noise when I'm doing my podcasts also, so you'll hear them every once in a while in the background. Let's see. What else? I think, yeah, it looks like these guys did a good job of sending me all the good questions. Awesome. Well, I guess if there are no more questions, I'm gonna call it a night. It was awesome doing this. Thank you all for watching. Thank you all for your awesome questions, and I'll see you again sometime soon. And until then, taxation is theft. See you guys around.